Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fuckadelics? How are you? Good. Now I'm answering myself. It's Mark Maron. Welcome to the show. This is WTF. It's my show. You're listening to me, Mark Maron. Did I mention that already? Well, look, folks, it's a pretty amazing episode today, I gotta say. It moved me when I recorded it. And it moved me again when I just listened to the song at the end of this episode. Melissa Etheridge is somebody we all know. We all know Melissa Etheridge. Everybody knows Melissa Etheridge. There was a couple years there where everything was Melissa Etheridge. And then you wonder, like, what's Melissa Etheridge been up to? And then someone gets in touch with me and says, hey, would you like to have Melissa Etheridge on the show? And I say, yeah. I'd like to know what Melissa Etheridge has been up to, and I'd like to hear her whole story, because I don't know that much about Melissa Etheridge. She's got a new record out. That's why she wants to come on the show, and I'm like, okay, it's not really about the record, but it's about her, but this new record, it's called This Is M.E., and it came out in the fall, and you can get it wherever you get music. But I said, yeah, let's go. Let's talk to Melissa Etheridge, and I got to tell you, man, this conversation was pretty astounding and pretty emotional, and like, it was very engaging. She came with her wife, Linda, lovely people, and she sat in here. I let Linda sit in here, and I don't usually do that, but they were so goddamn cute together. I had to let it happen, and it turned out to be a great conversation. Very moving, very deep, very informative, but just, you know, uplifting and heartwarming, and I just listened to the song that she plays at the end of this show that you will hear. This is happening for you. I believe it's called Take My Number. And I cried a little. And I cried a little when she played it. It's just there's something very earnest and sweet and wise about Melissa Etheridge. I'm going to say that confidently and earnestly. Because I was completely blown away by this whole experience that you're about to hear. I just wanted to tell you that up front. I think it's important that you know how I feel sometimes. Usually you can tell during the show, I imagine. But I, you know, for me to cry twice listening to a song, well, that's not true. I've been a little weepy since I've been without the nicotine, a little bit weepy. What's going on here? It's the Christmas season. I've got mail laying here. When is this from? Oh, this is weird. Some guy from Detroit. I don't even know. This was just sitting here, and it's been sitting here for months. I've always considered you a badass, but I've revoked your membership on account of having never been to Detroit. One, Detroit is definitely badass. One cannot be a badass having never been here. Two, thinking Detroit is dead or dying is definitively unbadass. It's akin to having a gluten allergy. You assume it's true because the mainstream media told you it's true, but it's total bullshit. Come visit, and I'll play tour guide. If you survive the mean streets, I'll return your badass card. Also, I'm super interesting. It would make for an extraordinary badass guest star. How could you resist? Always and forever, Timothy. I was just sitting here. I meant to read it because I liked it. I do have to go to Detroit. I do have to experience Detroit. I guess I was chatting about Detroit a while back, but that was just sitting here, so I thought I'd read it. The New Year's coming. I'm taking care of old business on my desk. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? So I didn't do anything. I did nothing for the holiday. I'm a Jew, and I'm a Jew through and through. I'm a Jew going back generations. And I did nothing. I didn't even know what day Hanukkah started. And you know what else? You know, I've got to reassess who I am or something. I'll be honest with you. I was only invited to one party, one Christmas party. And then at the last minute, I was invited to drinks at Al Madrigal, a wonderful comic, and his wife, Kristen, invite me every year to their thing. And I love that. I like going. I love them. And I see some friends there. And then Brendan Small invited me a few days ago to cocktails at his house. I believe that's tonight. I don't know if I'm going to make that. But only two parties. Now, you guys hear me every week. You hear me talk. It feels like I have friends, right? When I talk to these people, it feels like we get close, we connect. Two invitations. What is it about me? Are people afraid that I'm going to talk to them like I talk to them on the podcast at their party? Am I draining? Am I not somebody that people think like, hey, he'd be fun to have here? Where are my party invitations? I don't get it. I feel like I've made a lot of progress as a human being. I just want to come to your party. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. Granted, I didn't know what day Hanukkah started. Doesn't matter. I'm a guy living alone with two cats. And no one thinks like, maybe it'd be nice to have Mark over for supper since we're having people. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I just wonder what the fundamental glitch is where I don't seem like a good idea to have at your event, at your get-together, friends. I guess it plays into my whole sort of insecurity about that. Like, you know, everybody who comes in here, especially people I kind of know, or people that know people I know, or people that I respect, I feel strangely close to everybody. It's not based on anything. It's just the way I am. And I think they like me too. And I think we get along good. And I think we have nice conversation. And I think it would be a nice thing to say, you want to come to the party? But maybe people just think of me as some sort of, oh, he's that guy. I did a show. I liked it. Yeah, just that guy in that show. Maybe this is the angle. Maybe no one had parties this year. Maybe there were no parties. Maybe no one I know had a party this year. It's very distressing in a way. I don't even know if I go to the party. But I want to feel like I have friends, but I don't know if I really have friends. I think I talk to a lot of people here. I've got like two or three friends, but I don't hang out with them. Maybe that's the issue. Maybe I'm not social enough. Anyways, everything's fine. I've got to write a script over vacation. I guess it's officially vacation. I'm doing a script for my show, Marin. All the writing is going very well. It's all a very exciting, collaborative experience. The stories are all fun. Looking forward to shooting my third season in January. That's all going well. Didn't buy gifts for anybody. Maybe I'm not. Maybe if I sent cards or thank you notes or did those things that people do that you're supposed to do. And yeah, I'm getting a lot of Christmas cards. A few. That was very nice. The Richters sent me a Christmas card. Greg Fitzsimmons sent me a Christmas card. The Madrigal sent me a Christmas card. Carol Leifer sent me a Christmas card. So, you know, people are thinking of me. So I have a little stack of pictures of people's kids. Just a little reminder, a little yearly reminder of the path that I did not take. There's both gratitude and sadness in that path that I have taken, but it is what it is. Come on! Look, you know, I wanted this to be uplifting. I want you to have a good holiday. I hope you get what you wanted. I hope your presents are exciting, because no matter what anyone says, presents are fucking great. Presents make it worthwhile. Don't ever say like, I don't need presents. You want presents. Nothing better than opening a box and wondering like, what is this? Is this going to be something that's going to make my life really happy for a few minutes? Or is it going to be just a misfire? Nothing worse than unwrapping a misfire. That's very sad, especially if it's from somebody that you're intimate with. The intimate misfire is a harbinger, my friends. That's a hell of a sentence. That's right. You buy one bad shirt, one bad sweater, one bad book. If you just missed the mark a bit, maybe you can buy a couple presents. Cover your ass. Cover your ass. So if the misfire happens, at least there's something there that is undeniably on the mark. That's my Christmas advice. Also, be charitable, be giving, spread a little love to people that you hate. Try that. Not good at that. but I'm working on it. I saw Foxcatcher. That's the fucking movie of the year. Gotta be honest with you. The tone was held perfectly. The cinematography was stunning. The direction, stylized and perfect. The performances on every level, disturbing, deep, jarring. The story, sparse but perfect. Great movie, dark movie, deep movie. Based on true story. Not going to ruin anything. I'm not even going to say what it's about. I'm not going to spoil shit. I'm going to tell you that Foxcatcher is a beautifully realized piece of movie art. The whole thing. Enjoy. Enjoy that. And right now, I want you to be ready to be uplifted. Because God knows my intro didn't do it. Well, I'm a little nostalgic, you guys. A little nostalgic. We're going to talk to Melissa Etheridge now. The first voice you will hear, I do address her, her wife, Linda. And then you'll hear me and Melissa, and with occasional cackling and laughing in the background that might be Linda. But here's Melissa Etheridge and myself having an amazing conversation.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort, auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Nice to see you both. You're a TV writer. What's your whole name?
Linda Wallum. You're rich now. Now that I'm married.
Married.
Married. God.
Can we say again? Is that?
Well, you know, I was never legally married All right. before. This is my first legal marriage.
Look, I've been through two.
Yeah.
But I got no kids. I don't know how that happened. I must be a real asshole.
I have four kids, and I don't know how that happened.
You do know how it happened.
There's four kids that I know of, right? You know?
Yes. I was sort of obsessed with the idea of you using David Crosby's sperm. I thought there was a genius to it, but I also thought that was a risk. It was a roll of the dice.
Yes, yes. But it had to do with what I believed in at the time. Did I believe that we are just, that we're so predestined by our genes?
Right.
That if I used the sperm of a drug addict, you know.
But also a drug addict with one of the best voices in the world.
And you know what?
Like, I knew that. I knew that must be what you're thinking. Is it?
Well, yeah, the best voices in the world. And if you knew him personally, ask anyone who knows him.
Yeah.
He is one of the most amazing human beings you'll meet.
Right.
And his wife, Jan, was just so gracious. And it was perfect because anyone else I was looking at the time, you know, Brad Pitt, right? You know, I'm looking at Brad Pitt. It's like, okay, I need to think in the future.
Right.
And Brad Pitt wanted kids really bad.
Did you actually reach out to Brad Pitt for the sperm?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
Oh, oh.
This was the but these are guys that were actually
sure.
You know, and we would joke about it, you know, late at night.
But it also takes a certain type of guy to know that the child's going to be out there. And I imagine
that's exactly it.
Right.
That's what I needed. I didn't want a father.
Right.
I wanted the parts that I needed that I didn't have.
Yeah, I get
you know?
It. Yeah.
And so this is what fit perfectly. And I knew when the world, and I wasn't going to tell the world I was like, it's none of their business, until it was the only time I was ever chased and things were, it was, you know, who is the father? And I said, oh my God, my kids are now, they're going to be at school and someone's going to, who's your daddy? You
right,
know,
right,
to them.
Yeah.
And so I said, that's why I finally said, no, look, this is who the father is. Just go away and let them grow up now.
Uh-huh. And they did, right?
Yes. And they know that he is their biological father. They know that.
They're both biologically fathered by David.
David Crosby. Yeah, they're both full brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
And they're beautiful. No, they truly are.
Must
no, I'm going to show you a picture
because
it's radio.
It.
Yeah,
I was sort of
there's the two oldest ones. They're the Look at them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Got the good parts of David.
Yeah. And what did you learn genetically? Anything?
Nothing. I'm still confused.
No, there's no angelic voices coming out yet.
Oh, well, yeah.
Drug problems.
there they are.
Right.
But is that because I'm raising a child in Southern California?
Right.
You know, or is that,
sure.
Is that me?
Yeah.
You know, what is it?
Now, have they met David or how does that work?
Oh, yeah. Knew him. Because it was important because my other ex, mm-hmm. Julie, the first ex.
Okay.
Depends on how you look at it.
Right.
The first ex, she had been adopted. And so it was very important that they knew actually where they came from biologically. That's
right.
One of the reasons we picked someone that you would know.
Right. My brother's got three adopted kids and they know all the parents.
Yeah. Because it's like you don't want that, who's my, that
right.
weird
the,
dream.
The weird search.
Yes, exactly.
You want to send them out into the world
right,
to
go find
someone
your
in a trailer
real
park.
Father. Yeah, exactly. So I knew. Yeah, so we right. introduced them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and always called him, this is your bio dad. This
right.
is your, when someone says, do you have your father? Yeah, I have a father. And this is.
That's interesting. And they have a relationship with him
or
not?
Yeah, yeah. And they have a half brother, Django. Yeah. And,
right.
They see them and like they're like uncles, like your aunts and
wild.
Uncle. Yeah, that you would go see.
Well, that's nice that there's that honesty to it.
And that's because it has to be. Otherwise, it's drama and it's weird.
Well, that's a good way. That's a good line to draw, actually. That the difference, the alternative yes. to honesty is drama.
Exactly.
I gotta act a little more. I gotta be a little more honest. I think.
There you go.
I'm gonna be a little less dramatic.
You don't want it. It honesty kills drama. It is like.
I know, but sometimes drama is. You know.
Well, that's where we got our best work, right?
I made
a living off of drama. Listen, I'm the only one. Jesus.
Yeah, I listened to the new record, and I didn't know what I was going to get into. And then, I put it on. I got it this morning, and
oh,
I'm
this
like,
morning.
"Well, yeah, well, because when we booked this,
we give you lots of time to.
Well, it wasn't done when
oh, yeah,
I think we
okay.
were originally
yeah,
talking, and I'm
ago.
Like, oh, I need to hear it. So I just sat down. And it's all fresh in my mind, and I'm like, "Holy shit, she's gunning for it. she's not fucking around.
Right. Why? Why should I?
No, I don't think you should.
Right.
If you still got the goods, fuck it.
Right. I can sing like. Oh, you said fuck, so I can say fuck.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I can sing like fuck.
You can sing like fuck.
I can
fuck
play the guitar like crazy.
And there's all that. There's that edge to it where it's a little bit menacing sexually
yes.
and like.
Do you know?
I'm thinking about these troubled women in these diners that you're walking up to. Oh my God.
I know.
Melissa's a predator out there. What are you doing, girl?
Do you know what? I just got the best news. I've been banned in Barnes & Noble.
Already?
Already. Not really banned, but they're going to play my. They want to play my. You know, we got to deal with them where they'll play the CD in the store,
right.
But they won't play one song off the album.
Let me see which one. Let me guess.
Could
Ain't
be all
that
of
bad?
Them. No, you would think it would be that. No,
maybe which
no.
one?
No, All the Way Home. It's just the horny song that I wrote. That
oh,
they
yeah,
just
oh, because you got fire and you're down there.
Yeah, I know it down there, right?
Yeah.
I got fire down below. That,
yeah.
I mean, Bob Seger wrote that in the
sure.
70s.
Bob Seger. That's interesting. You bring
yeah.
him up because, like, if I think about it, I never even thought about it. You just said that. But there's a similarity.
Oh, I love Bob Seger.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, come on. I grew up
realize.
With Main Street.
Night Moves
Night
was the
moves.
Biggest thing in the world.
Do you remember the first time you heard it? It
yeah.
was like epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That song is about 6
minutes
long.
You wanted to cry.
Long. Yes.
You're usually in junior high.
I know.
And you're like, oh, my God.
Working on the night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if it was at night and you were driving by yourself, you're just like, oh, yeah, man.
And he thinks back, past the woodshed.
Bad and
with
like
the,
Aerosmith and shit.
Oh,
I was
Walk This Way.
Well, I was listening, to the first Aerosmith record with Dream On and Mama Kin and all the, it's so good.
Wasn't it weird
man.
When they were so, like, big
so
in the 70s
good.
And then they got, like, drugs and then they came back in
well,
the
they
90s?
Well, they got overproduced and then they figured out what bell to hit. But those first few records, especially that first record is dirty, man.
So
it's really
naughty.
Good.
That's the spirit of rock and roll is naughtiness.
It definitely is.
That's, and I wanted to
I feel it. I got, it
be
was a
rock
little,
and roll.
Yeah, I was a little uncomfortable. And
yes,
it was amazing.
Good.
It was good.
See?
It was good.
Why not?
And then, but it was weird because, like, I'm listening to the whole record, and then we get like all the way through. There's actually a little funky, almost rappy stuff there in the
yes.
middle, and then at the end, you did your sort of like, you're kind of like a middle age. I'm gonna look at myself song.
Exactly.
You're gonna throw one in. Throw
and
one
that's
in for
why
the,
I put it in the end. It's
this
like,
one's
yeah.
for all you ladies that have been with me for 30 years, right?
But. I'm having a lot of sex. Is not? No, isn't anyone else?
No, I sure I am.
Okay, see, yeah. So, and that's what I want to sing about.
Well, I think that you've always been pretty straight. Honest, wrong word. With that. Never been straight, always been honest.
There you go. And honesty keeps the drama out.
So, but let's go back, because I don't know a lot of about your backstory. Like, what kind of music? We just talked about Bob Seger. We just talked about Aerosmith. Like, if you're sitting around or you're in the car, you know, what do you go back to when you just want to listen to shit? Like, to get in the spirit of things.
Well, it depends on what the spirit is, because I mean, it could be, if.
What'd you grow up with?
My parents were the first influence of music, and that was Mamas and Papas. They were kind of
really?
Kind of 60s cool.
Right, because we missed it. It's weird because I'm 51.
Oh, 53.
Right, so but we still kind of missed the 60s. We still got, it was sort of, we got the overflow.
At the end of the 60s where it was the Beatles were, I kind of came into it when the Beatles, my first 45s were very much Beatles, Stones, then Carole King, I went down the Carole King. And then I had, in the late 60s, early 70s, I had the London Symphony Orchestra version of the Who's Tommy.
Oh, right.
And that blew my mind. And I used to sit and listen to that with my headphones over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I had George Harrison's All Things Must Pass. And, you know, just really, you know.
So you got all of it
album
coming in.
Rock. Oh, I love that stuff. And I was playing in a country western band.
Well, I can hear that all over your stuff. I mean,
so
like,
I had to learn. I saw Tammy Wynette, Conway Twitty, George Jones, all those. So that's in there.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in Kansas.
What does that even mean?
I know. It's
I mean, it's like one of those places, like I've been there. I mean, I would think I was just there, actually. Where's the college? Where's the
KU? God.
Oh no, the that's small Lawrence. Fancy Lawrence.
Lawrence, that's Lawrence, Kansas. That's very close to my hometown.
I was in Lawrence.
Yes, that's where people go.
Yeah, and I did some shows at a film festival there.
Yes,
they're very nice people.
They are.
And then
lovely.
I went to St. Louis to perform, and I don't know what the hell is in Kansas.
That's where I'm from. Is that whole Kansas is? We're not the South,
right?
And
I know. And
we're not the East.
Yeah.
We're not Ohio at all.
Right.
And we're not like Minnesota and Chicago. My wife's from Chicago.
Yeah.
We don't have that act. We are just hopelessly prairie, bland, white bread, mayonnaise.
Well, it sort of defines it. I mean, it's sort of a punchline. I mean, Kansas is sort of like, Kansas, it's the Wizard of Oz.
I know.
But also is incredibly conservative. Incredibly sort of rooted in the worst parts of the Christian idea.
Well, as you would think, yet that majority is very thin. Yes, they are
now
a red state.
Right.
Yes, they are conservative.
Right.
Yet 48% is still very liberal and very artful, and they, I mean, that's where Brown versus, you know, Topeka, that's where, you know, John Henry came from. We're known as.
You get into the debate.
We get in there.
And hopefully the righteous will win.
Exactly.
But it's also where the first protests against
Westboro Baptist Church was that.
And the protests, the original protests against Planned Parenthood and the abortion issue were all sort of there.
Yeah, so it's a battlefield.
Yeah, that's
really
exciting.
Is.
And was it that way when you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up, my father was Republican and my mother was Democrat. And
so it was right in the house. The debate was ongoing.
Yes.
Active.
Active
yeah.
in the house. And it was in the high school. We had everything.
Were you brought up with religion?
No.
Well, that's you got off the hook there.
Yet I was. Yeah, I did. Yet I was brought up because my parents thought you're supposed to take your kid to church.
Yeah.
So they did until, I know, like just in case.
Because
I might go to hell and we don't want them to go to hell.
Well,
you know?
There's that thing where it's like, well, we're not really that active, but why deny the kid the opportunity to get, you know, bullied by God?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
But what I found was music.
Yeah.
I found the choir. So I kept going to church.
For the music.
For the music.
Yeah.
And then and got really involved in the youth, because there's all that Christian youth. I started writing Christian music in
you
high
did?
School. Absolutely.
That? Well, hopefully, like maybe in 5 or 6 years, you've been trying to record that shit.
Let's do it.
You're like,
I'm ready. I'm ready to take
I can
that
see
on.
How you're holding your hand up. I'm ready. I got the spirit within me. So you wrote some Jesus songs?
Yes.
Oh, hell. I'd like to hear the Jesus song.
I know. They're really sweet. No, there's one called There's Love in This Place that was really, it was more of a youth, not so much a Jesus song as it was, you know.
Well, they're never quite
song.
Jesus songs, are they? They're like even the Jesus music now, it's sort of like, I get what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they say him, I know what they're talking about. I get the message. But what'd your dad do?
He was a high school teacher.
Republican high school teacher of what?
He was actually hired because he was the coach. He was that guy. He's the coach of the basketball team, and they let him teach something. He was almost illiterate, I believe. Right. No, because he could barely spell.
That's the price they pay, right?
Yes. Yeah, so it's
he
small
must have been
town.
A good coach.
He took them to state. He was a very, very good coach. My father was very athletic.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful, wonderful man. He was the one who used to drive me around to all my gigs.
Really?
Yeah. So
when you were in high school?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
And he would sit. He's the only reason I could play at the Parents Without Partners dance of the Knights of Columbus, you know,
or
the Eagles clubs, or that's
he'd get
where
you
I was.
In?
Yeah. And he'd sit there and he wouldn't drink. He would sit there and drink Coca-Cola all night. And then he'd load up. We'd load up the car and we'd go home.
Were in a band at that time?
Yeah.
And you were just a guitar player. Or you were singing.
I was singing and guitar playing, and I played keyboards. I did everything.
What was the first outfit you were in? What were they called? What was the
Chuck
was the
Hammersmith one? And the Wranglers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there outfits?
Yes. I wish I had a picture.
There has to be outfits when you're the Wranglers.
Oh, wait a minute. Did they give you actually the CD?
No, they gave me a download.
Oh, because there's a picture in the CD of the old band I was in high school, and we all had the outfits.
How old were you?
Oh, in that picture, I'm probably 14, 15.
And you're playing what kind of guitar?
I was playing an acoustic. I was playing my Ovation, and then I had a, did I have a Les Paul then? I think I did.
Uh-huh. Les Paul, just a standard?
A custom,
yeah. The black one? Or
no, that's
Sunburst?
The one I have now. It was a Sunburst. It was
the reddish orange.
Yeah, oh, it was great. Yeah. I sold it. I'm so goddamn pissed. I know.
Like never sell guitars.
I know.
Yeah.
But we don't know that then.
No, you don't. You don't. You know, and then you got to scramble to try to get it back. But all right, so, because like this, on this album, there's some pretty dirty guitar playing. Is that all you
That's
mostly?
Me. That's really? My Les Paul custom on. Ain't that bad?
Yeah.
I worked with my... I talk to my record company. I'm like, I want to work with some badass dudes, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think I can hold up
mm-hmm.
to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, okay, we finally got this rock star. And rock star, he's done, you know, J-Lo and Chris Brown, and he's bad.
Right.
He's bad.
Guitar player? Or producer?
No, producer. Uh-huh. He's one of these producer guys,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
So I show up, and the studio is completely different now than they used to be. Used to be you show up in a recording studio, and there's a big room
mm-hmm.
where the band is and everything, and then the control room's kind of small.
Yeah.
Now, the control room's huge, and there's just a little vocal booth.
Yeah, because they do everything
they
on the
do
board.
Everything. There's no real music. So I bring my Les Paul and my amp in, and he's like, what's it? What's that? He's fascinated with it.
They didn't even have a mic for the amp?
No, they were like, we have to go get a mic. We had to go find one and put one on there. So we had to show him how to mic it. I go in there with Rockstar.
Yeah.
And he's
that's
got this
name.
That's his name.
Oh, okay.
He's named Rockstar. Yes.
I should have known that, right?
Yes. And he's got the Versace gold around his neck. And mm-hmm. he's looking at me and I'm smoking with him in there. He's like, this is going to be a problem. Like, he's like looking at me like, whoa. And I'm smoking him under the table. I can smoke more than him, you know. He's like, whoa. And so we start writing this song, and the name of the what we're smoking is called A Sunny Day Honey Stick.
Uh-huh.
And so that's in the song.
Oh,
I got A Sunny Day Honey Stick.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we were
of the song.
Just, and it
yeah.
And we're playing, and so I go in there and sing, and he's like kind of telling me, now sing. He loves that he can act. He goes, you can actually sing.
Yeah.
And so I'm in there singing, and he comes and he gets in front of the computer to do something after I sang, and he said, hey, where's the auto-tune? And the guy's like, oh, I would never put auto-tune on her voice. And she's singing like that without auto-tune?
Yeah.
So I had a
real stuff.
It was real.
Good.
Oh.
What's that?
Oh, this is a honey stick.
Oh, that's it?
That's for you.
Oh, thank you. No, that's all right.
We didn't know.
Oh, no, it's okay. I can appreciate
your
it.
Your brain looks like it.
Oh, dude, it's been 15 years. I did my time.
Okay.
It's not there's no judgment. It's just that if I start that, who knows where I'll be in 3 days. That's the kind of guy I am.
Okay, then. I understand it.
But all right, so you're in Kansas. You're playing with the Wranglers.
Yes.
Wearing your outfit, and your dad's driving you to the Knights of Columbus Hall.
Yes.
You got a dream.
Yes, indeed. That is the closest anyone's ever come to telling the truth, right there. Yes.
And your old man's on board with it.
Yes.
That was just pretty good for a football coach.
Yes.
You have other siblings?
Yes.
How they?
I've got the sibling one.
Uh huh.
Yeah. And she lives in Arkansas.
Okay. You talk to her?
No.
All right. So one went bad.
Yes. There you go. Okay. So anything I did was great.
We got one good one. Whatever she wants to do, as long as she doesn't throw her life away.
Exactly. That's exactly. My father basically said, just be happy. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Right on.
So when did you do it? Like, did you finish high school and you went to the same school your dad taught at?
Yeah.
That's not easy for
us. No, I skipped one class, and he knew before the class was over that I skipped the class.
Oh, my God.
But that is so not fair.
What were you doing? What?
She was a friend.
Oh, yeah. I think we can talk openly about this. 40 years later, I don't think it's... No. That's the one you're going to worry about?
Right.
We just talked about David Crosby's kids, but you're afraid she's going to judge you on making out in a car when you were in high school during a class? That's cute.
I know.
What, you think she's been dirty all along. Since 14, this chick was nothing but trouble. Nothing but trouble. All right, so that was going on. Well, did your dad know about that?
I think it was, you know how they do, but they don't know, you know, they don't say anything back then.
The
parents didn't know what to say.
Right,
the ones
right.
that, you know, it's just like, but don't bring it up, you know, don't ask, don't tell, basically.
You know they know, but why bother saying it?
Exactly, yeah. So basically when I came out right before I left for Los Angeles, or Boston, I forget where I came out, but I said, Dad, you know, I went through this
whole
thing.
But you came out at home to them first.
Totally.
Before
leaving, because... You know, they would.
I'm leaving. You should know.
I'm leaving. You should know. I'm gay.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, I don't understand it, but as long as you're happy." I said,
"Really?
Cool.
That's
yeah.
great."
And so
from a Republican football coach.
Indeed.
Score one for that side, I guess. At least with your dad.
Yeah. Exactly. Right on.
Yeah. So after you played in how many bands in high school?
Oh my gosh, I went through the Wranglers, the Showmen,
all country.
Well, by the time I was about a junior in high school, I was playing in kind of that pop cover band. Where I was playing Fleetwood Mac and...
Oh, was it? What album was Fleetwood? Was that Rumors?
Rumors
already.
Right there,
we're the
yeah,
same age, so you're doing all that shit.
Yeah, so I'm doing all that.
Well, you graduated high school, and then where'd you go?
I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. My parents wanted to send me to college, and I said, no, just music school, please. That's all I want to do.
And that's a good one. I went to college in Boston. That's the music school.
Yeah. And it really is up to you whether you want to get something out of it, because I went for just a few weeks. And that was, I really wasn't into learning.
No scales for you.
No, I was writing songs. I was wooing
girls.
You just
wanted to play.
I just wanted to play, yeah.
It's a real nerd school.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some real weird noodlers come out
of
there.
Yeah, and I actually wish I had at least stayed a year and learned some little bit more chops. I really had to fight.
Well, the weird thing about chops, and I think that you're speaking to it now in terms of like being where you're at now and knowing that your guitar playing is in a place where you can hold up, is that... It took me a long time to realize that rock guitar, blues guitar, it's all the same notes, and it's not about how sophisticated they are. It's the feeling you can bring to them. So when you can hold up, I mean, you can hold up. I mean, you listen to Albert King. He's no, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's singular, and it's not that complicated. So it's just a matter of, like, it's confidence and feeling,
thank you.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's so much of it.
And tone.
So much of it. Oh, my God. What's my sound?
Exactly. Yeah. So how long did you stay in Boston, though? Did you start playing in a out there?
Yeah, I started playing in a restaurant, Ken's by George. Remember the Ken's Steakhouse restaurant?
Yes, yes.
This one was his fancy adventure.
Cambridge?
No, it was right across from the John Hancock, right at Copley Square. Right
there. Yeah.
And I started playing the cocktail hour from 5 to 9.
Just you on the guitar?
Me on the piano, actually. It was more of like a piano lounge.
Really?
And then I'd play Barry Manilow medleys and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. It sounds like this Come is like your period in hell.
Yes, indeed. That's exactly
it. You wanted to be a working musician.
That's I actually had when I got to Boston, I got a job as a security guard, and I was so freaking miserable that I took
Could you pick a less gay job than the female security guard?
No, it was nothing interested me. I didn't know how to anything but stand around and.
Did you wear a uniform?
Yeah, a uniform. Yes, in a hospital. Oh. It was in a hot. Yeah, it was gnarly. To count Percocets
Mass General
and stuff.
Or stuff?
No, it was deaconess.
The
deaconess.
Like in Brighton? Where the hell
was it? Yeah, it was somewhere out there. Yeah. I didn't know.
All right, so, okay, so you're a hospital security guard. You're playing Barry Manilow songs in Kansas and Copley Square on the piano, no less.
Yes.
When did you lose your fucking mind?
Let's see. Well, I got fired all of a sudden after playing there for a year.
A year?
A year, yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. I think they found out I was gay.
You think that was it?
That's the only time that I really think I might have lost a job because I was gay.
Took him a year.
I know.
That to me must have been an amazing display of restraint on your part somehow. That you didn't...
Indeed. Well,
by
I
listening
was.
To these songs, it seems like most of the waitresses should have been in trouble.
Well, but that's the drama. Remember about drama?
Look, nothing but drama.
Okay.
You made your name on standing outside someone's house.
Yes, indeed. So that's where it grew. Yeah, I was, you know, you're in the closet except for the, you know, the couple people that you tell that you get to know and then you find they're gay. And that's, you know, that's how it works when you're 18. I was 18. You
that's
know?
How old you were?
Yeah.
Okay, so you leave Ken's.
I leave Ken's. I get a job for a minute at the Copley Plaza across the street,
the
and
hotel?
Then it burns down. And I took that as a sign.
Yeah.
And I went back home to Kansas. I did. I was like, fuck. Yeah.
And you went back to Kansas to regroup?
To make some money because I was going to go to LA because I knew that's where I was going to get signed. And that's where I was going to make the money. So.
But at this time, were you writing songs?
Yeah, I started, but I wasn't playing for them for people in public.
Uh-huh.
Yet.
Were they songs that appeared on records eventually? Or they're...
No, the oldest song that's on a record, on the first record, I wrote in Long Beach when I was playing in the girls' bars.
Okay.
Yeah, in Long Beach.
So, all right, so you go back to Kansas. What do you do to make money?
Because now I can play. I can play. So I go play at the Granada Royale.
Oh,
do you remember that hotel?
No, how am I going
to? It used to be the...
Kansas? No,
it was a chain. It was like an Embassy Suites.
Okay.
And it was there was a lounge there called the La Veranda Lounge.
Uh-huh.
And so I went in there and played on the piano because I could do it. And I got, I opened first because that's the gig you get first.
Yeah.
I did the happy hour from 5 to 9, whatever.
Your test gig.
And I opened for, I swear to God, Rhett and Scarlett. That was their name.
Were they an act?
Yes.
They were a Gone with the Wind act?
No, they were like a club act, you know, that they would sing the songs.
Sure.
And then eventually I got the job. I got their job.
They wanted something more modern.
Maybe so. So I did that. And I made money. I lived in Kansas City and I had a little apartment. I went to the clubs there. I got to know a lot of people. And then I left for Los Angeles.
She got around.
No.
You know, are you taking all this in? Do you have any questions now that she's here?
I just keep checking. There's just 4 kids, right?
That I know of, there's only 4.
All right, so there you go. So you're a professional musician and a professional lesbian by the time you get to L.A.
Yes! Woohoo!
You got everything. You can handle a guitar.
Yes.
And you can handle that other thing.
Yes, got it well in hand. And I have an aunt who lives in Silver Lake.
Right here. Yeah.
On Dahlia Street, she lived. And so I said, I'm coming out and I'm going to sleep on your couch. Of course, my sister had just been out there and wreaked all sorts of havoc. So they were not looking forward.
The problem.
I know. Right. Everywhere I went. Mm-hmm. And so I went out there and I slept on a couch. And the funny thing, I found out that there's a lot of people trying to make it in the music business in Los Angeles.
Really? You found that out, huh?
Yeah.
What year is this?
This is 1982.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And, so what's happening in music then?
Oh.
What's
it's
around
all
here?
Guns and poison hair.
Oh, so that was you. That was
spandex.
Hair metal at the peak of hair metal.
As it's growing.
It peaked
like in like 84. These were the bands that were just starting.
The Roxy and the Rainbow.
Yeah. And it was right before they all hit super.
So like the Fleetwood Mac thing was drifting.
Yeah.
So that whole.
I got here thinking that I'd see Jackson Browne and the Eagles.
They've been killed.
Gone. They're killed.
It's, annihilated. Yes, by hair and guitars.
Yes, and it's all spandex.
Go back up to Topanga, you pussies.
Indeed. There's nowhere for me to play.
Right.
And even if I got a gig, you pay to play. You don't make any money in this town. And I quickly was running out of money, and I hawked my typewriter.
Yeah.
Because I didn't hawk my guitar yet.
Where were you? So you're staying at your aunt's.
Living in Silver Lake. I'm looking around. I'm looking in the calendar section.
What are you looking to play, though, at that time? Are you looking to...
I didn't know how. How do you do it? You get out here. Oh, it's so what you do. I didn't know what to do.
But you had your songs. But what was the dream, though? You were.
I had a demo. I'd made a demo of my four original songs.
With a band?
No,
you?
It was just me.
Really?
Me and you know, I played the
singer songwriter thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have my demo, and so you start sending it out to record companies. Right. They get a billion of these, right? You know, and I'm not, right. And I'm looking for management. I'm looking for whatever, and so I got the calendar section out.
Yeah.
And I just went to where live music, and I just and I called all these places. You know, can I audition? Can I audition? Can I audition?
Right.
And I finally called a place. It was called the Candy Store.
Yeah.
And it was on a Sunset. It was the Coconut Teaser later.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
that place
right there on Crescent Heights.
Yeah, right. Boom. It's right there. Yeah. But in 1982, it was called the Candy Store.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. I went down during the day, and auditioned. Played a couple songs, and she says, "You know what? We have this little cabaret. There's the dance part of the club." But we have this little cabaret that we have live music, and we don't pay anything, but you can come play a 20-minute set. I said, I'm here.
Yeah.
So this is my first gig in L.A.
Yeah.
And I go home, and I show up that night, and it's an all-black nightclub. But not only is it
all-black
nightclub, it is the all-black nightclub. Right. Marvin Gaye is in there.
Really?
I meet Stevie Wonder.
Get out.
The basketball players, you know, Abdul Jabbar. Sure. It's the hot black.
All black guys, blind black guys, coked up black guys.
All of them, they're all in there.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. But I quickly changed my set list and did, you know, some... I was a huge hit.
You did it?
Yeah, it was great. I would play there like once a week for 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And one time I got the door, which was, I think it was about $50. I was like, whew. But in the meantime, I had met a girl and gone down to Long Beach,
right,
where I was in a club that there was a piano in the corner. I said, hey, do you have live music? They said, no, but do you want to come play? I started playing. They made a position where I would play from 5 to 9 before the disco, and that's when I started playing in the girls' nightclubs in Long Beach.
So there was, you say that like there were many. Was there a whole circuit of girls' nightclubs?
A circuit, yeah, maybe. There was about four or five in the, and I'm talking Long Beach, Pomona, Pasadena. I ended up playing in Pasadena.
Right here.
Yeah, out.
Were these secret girl bars?
Secret, I mean, it's the 80s, we're not advertising.
Right.
You know, but it's word of mouth is how it gets around, yeah.
So, and...
That's just, unfortunate use of words.
Looking back at her wife. Word of mouth. Made her self-conscious just to illustrate what's happening here.
Okay.
But it's all going to work out.
It is.
It's good for everybody.
That's what my mom says. It all turned out.
This is like one-sided couples counseling right now. You guys are going to have the other discussion in the car afterwards.
Oh no, we're going to have a great time. No, you have no idea. This is great. This is awesome.
You have any questions? Questions, Linda?
I'm good so far. Okay. Keep going. I love where you're going.
All right, so now you're like this strange kind of rock, folk, cabaret singer at lesbian bars.
Yes.
In Long Beach, Pomona, and Pasadena.
Yes.
That's a niche market.
But they're paying me money.
Nobody else is making
money in this town singing music.
Right.
Yes, it is a bit of a niche market.
So I'm sure they all knew you and they excited? Oh,
yes. I mean, I would have
20,
30 people.
Oh, yeah. That's a big crowd.
It was.
Yeah.
You know, when you've been alone in a club when there's one person, there's the guy at the door and the bar.
There's three people.
Yes.
Not talking to each other.
It's awful.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was the one bar in Pasadena, I would play on Sunday nights, and these girls would come in after their soccer game. And
Of course.
So they would play soccer. And then
in softball season.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's perfect. No, it's absolutely
There's no
the
field
truth.
Hockey out here. So so I guess you have to be in Boston for the field hockey players.
Yes, no, that's it. Yeah, so this was just the soccer girls. Mm-hmm. And I think she was the coach, But she was a straight woman. Mm-hmm. She was straight. And she was married to somebody in the music business.
Right.
That's the sure. So it's a soccer team coach married to somebody in the music business.
Questionable straight woman.
Right, exactly.
Married to the guy in the music business that doesn't know she's at the club.
Right. Right. Anyway, no, yeah. They brought her down.
Yeah.
And she eventually brought him down. He was my manager for 30 years.
Really?
Yeah. I just recently changed management last year. But he was the guy. He had managed Bread. And I mean, he was
they
like legitimate. Yeah, he was legitimate in the business.
Yeah,
I
remember Bread's Greatest Hits was a popular 8-track in the station wagon when I was
yes.
a kid.
Very
guitar man was a
guitar. Yes.
Baby, I'ma want
yes,
you.
Baby,
guitar
I'ma
man.
Want you.
I don't remember the other ones. Those are the big two.
I found a diary underneath. Oh, yeah. He had a billion hits. He had a billion.
Yeah.
If a picture paints a
thousand. Oh, is that theirs
words.
Too?
Oh my God, that's theirs. Yes.
That guy.
That guy. Yeah,
but that shit was over.
That was shit was done, and he had left to go work up his and now so he was a manager in Pasadena trying to and
well, he was in Bread, or he
no
just
no no he just
him.
Managed him.
Okay
no good. No the
so he made a fortune that guy.
He made a fortune but didn't get part of the publishing but anyway
oh
yeah so because he was just manager and now right. they weren't working so he wasn't making any
money. Oh, the publishing's where it's at
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then he doesn't want to come see me uh-huh. Finally his wife's like no you got to come down and see her. He came to see me. Sign me right there. He starts, instead of taking me out of the clubs, because I was already had my little niche market going, yeah. making some money, he starts bringing record company executives to the gay clubs to see me. So for 5 years.
Smart,
but it takes 5 years. Everyone in town saw me. Everybody, you know.
Again and again.
Again. Over and over and over. And I would get all the way up to, the top of Warner Brothers or Virgin Records or EMI, all of them.
With what though? A&M. With what exactly?
They heard Like the Way I Do.
Yeah.
That I was doing that.
But they had to picture you. They
yeah.
had to figure
this
out
is
how
1983.
We gonna,
yeah. How
are we going to put a band behind her? What are we
and
this do
is
this?
1983 to 4
right.
when it's
hard sell.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not easy and they don't hear the hit songs and
right.
this is
right. And at that point I imagine A&R they're
Debbie
starting
Gibson
to
and, yeah.
to lose their vision. You know what I mean? Like I think yeah. it was one of those periods where, no one knew how to pick a hit because a lot of people were out of whack with what was happening.
Totally.
Right.
Totally, totally, totally.
So 5 years.
So it takes a long time until finally a guy who was a producer who knew blah, 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 brings Chris Blackwell of Island Records down. Now,
right.
Chris Blackwell is the, he's English dude, made all his money in Jamaica, brought Bob Marley to the world,
right.
U2,
right.
Robert Palmer,
right.
really cool independent
right.
record label.
Right.
He walks in, he hears four songs and goes, why aren't you signed yet? I want you to, he was like, what's wrong with everybody? This is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And signed me right there, made the first record.
Because he was outside the box
yeah,
already
totally.
Just by the nature of he was doing more roots music, world music, and
yeah.
like he knew he had a marketing machine in place. For stuff that was not
unusual,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the deal.
That was it. Boom.
And
done. First record.
And then they put you with a band.
Oh, you want to know? Okay. Well, he kind of signs me and then runs away because that's what he does. He goes away, and I'm like, here I am.
Call so and so.
Yeah. And so now I've got to make my first record. Well, I don't have a band, so I'd done a few demos and knew a few musicians. So I called him up and said, hey, let's get together and make this record. And my manager puts me with this producer that he knows from Northern California named Jim Gaines. He had done Steve Miller Band mm-hmm. and a little bit of Journey, a little bit of... Those were big then, yeah. So I make this album. I go up there and make this album with
big
him.
Big production though, huh?
But it's a big production. And it's all the big production and he put my little voice on top.
Mm.
And so I made this whole record. And I came and I played it for Chris Blackwell. And he goes, well, Melissa, I really have to tell you, I really hate this record.
Mm.
I was like, oh, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
Done. My career's over. And he just didn't know what to do. And the guys I'd been working with, my musicians, they called me and said, look, we've been to the bar. We see what you can do. That's what Chris Blackwell wants. In the meantime, I had taken pictures for the album cover. And if
yeah.
you know that of the first album, that the photo of me in the yeah. leather jacket kind of yeah. jumping up, he actually had that photo blown up, sent to the studio,
oh, yeah.
put on the thing. He said, make this record.
Yeah.
He said, make the record that fits this photo.
Right.
And so he gave us 4 days.
Yeah.
So I made that whole first record.
Based on?
On that, yes, yeah, on that picture. and 4 days. Yeah.
But that was just sort of like being supported by these dudes that understood what yeah. you could do.
They knew it
and
was
just
life.
Kept it straight.
That's what kept it was. It yeah.
Who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not straight.
Well, yeah. 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 Yeah.
And like, so, and that got a lot of attention, the first record.
Mm-hmm.
It charted.
You know, Underground, it was, right. yeah, I didn't have a big, you know, hit. It was Bring Me Some Water, you know.
Right.
It was the first that people who were really into music.
Right.
It was these great radio stations back then. There was a great radio station here in L.A.
Yeah.
That went away a couple years later, but it was really kind of a Tracy Chapman came out at the same time. It was a kind of a renaissance in music.
So, all right, so now you're on the radar.
Yes.
You're a real deal.
Yeah.
And now you got to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
So the second album, same situation.
Same band, same. Yeah. Same guys. I had written the songs. I was making the second album when I was nominated for a Grammy for the first in the rock female category.
And at that time, though, like, you were sort of a singular voice, and you still are, really, for female rock. I mean, in my mind at that time, there had not been someone with that much, you know, earnestness and balls, for lack of a better
yeah.
word, and swagger.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Than you. So I'm sure there were a lot of people going like, what the fuck? Who's this chick with the guitar?
Yeah.
I mean, there was some punk rock stuff going on.
Yeah, but it was very different. I didn't fit in any of those categories.
Right, this is more like American kind of, you know, respecting yeah. the roots. You know what I mean? Like
Bruce Springsteen was, you know, my guy.
Right?
It was always, what would Bruce do?
Yeah.
To the whole thing. Yeah.
And what would he do generally?
Exactly. Well, it's like, you know.
Where's Clarence?
Yeah, right. It's funny. I wanted a saxophone player, and I went, "That's too much. I can't." then I'm just, there's a girl. Yeah.
Were you meeting these guys at this time? Like after your first record?
Oh,
were there?
After my first record, I did meet Bruce Springsteen. And the first time I met him was at Dan Tana's. You know,
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at the bar waiting for a table. I hope.
A woman. It reminds me of throw a girl in. Some girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, waiting
anyway,
for some.
I'm sitting at the bar. And I look across yeah. to the door, and Bruce Springsteen has walked in, and he's picking up his to-go order.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Bruce Springsteen. Yeah. Oh, my God. So I'm sitting there, and he looks across and recognizes me.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
Get out.
My brain exploded.
Oh, yeah. What'd
and
he say?
Looked at me, and he said... And he waved and smiled, hey! And he kind of motioned me to come over. I was like, fuck!
Yeah.
And so I go over there, and he's like, how you doing? I'm just getting some chow. I'm going to take it back to the shack. You know,
yeah, yeah.
He's living in Beverly Hills in the huge place.
Right.
And he says, who was the, one of his guitar, one of his players, and I can't remember the name, was it Danny? He had shown him my album, and he knew, and he'd just seen when I was on the Grammy Awards. And so that was a big moment. And I actually talked to him a lot, and we ended up performing. He played on my Unplugged in 94. He came on and we did Thunder Road. So yeah, huge dreams. Huge dream comes true right
that's
there.
That's all coming true. So yeah. Okay, so you do two more records before the huge record.
Yeah, I do. I make three records and then...
They all do okay.
They all do just fine.
Right.
And the third record was kind of just a little bit less, so I got that scared kind of, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And so...
Why do you think that happened?
Well, the third record came out in 1990, and
everything's changing again.
Everything's changing. Music business, grunge, all of a sudden it's Nirvana.
Right.
All of a sudden it's Soundgarden and it's Guns N' Roses, and this sort of rock and roll as this crazy heroin, whatever that was, that grunge thing, Seattle
thing. A little chaotic,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
but
was.
But still, you know, it's weird though, because in defense of, like, I'm going to do it publicly, but Pearl Jam was about as straight ahead as you could be. So, like, you know, whatever Nirvana and the grunge thing was
yeah.
doing, whatever chaos and pushing the envelope was going on there, still, like, Pearl Jam 10
was amazing.
I mean, you know, that was straight
yes.
up. So
yeah.
it was still there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I recognized that
right.
in them. Yet, this was Seattle, and they were now calling it alternative.
Right.
And I just missed the alternative boat, so I'm not alternative.
You're
now,
a
even
misser
though,
of boats. You're a professional misser of boats.
I am. And so I'm not alternative. So I'm not played on K-Rock.
Right.
I'm kind of floating out there. My third album kind of, and I actually started working with like some, there were these new things called, you know, loops or these, you know, the what they do now, how they make loops and create right. songs from other songs now.
Oh, right, right. Sampling.
Yeah, sampling. Yeah. I don't know, I couldn't think of that. Sampling. So I tried a couple samples in, and I was kind of experimenting on the third album.
Right.
And I look back, and I love so much about the third album. It was kind of experimental for me, but I saw a ship going away, and I went, wait a minute. So I said, okay, I better get back to what I know and love and do, and that's blues rooted rock and roll.
Right, right.
And so I picked up my guitar and put bum ba dong. And I started I'm the Only One. I'm like, right. that's the anchor of this album is going to be that feeling. And it's just going to be rock and
yeah,
roll.
Yeah, why fuck with that? It's yeah, lasted exactly. the whole time.
Exactly.
And also, like, because, you know, in the tradition of, like, you know, Seeger or even Petty to a certain degree, I mean, there it's interesting that you say you experimented, but I could hear in your voice, you're like, I was desperately trying.
Yes.
to lock in with whatever the fuck was going on at that
yes.
time. Because I wasn't going away.
Right. Because I needed to do this wanted to do this, and I'm not right, done. I'm right. so not done.
Yeah, yeah. And then you did it.
Boom. Nailed and it. At the same time, mm-hmm. I'm getting enough notoriety that
right.
people are now asking me personal questions.
Mm-hmm.
So the third album, you know, and I obviously had this underground lesbian following.
They knew.
Everybody knew.
Right.
It was, again, don't ask, don't tell, though.
Right.
And it started, I finally did an interview with this guy for my third album, it was during the third album run, and it was for a music magazine, and I did my talk where I would use no pronouns, uh-huh. you know, they, my partner, whatever, and he changed all my pronouns to my boyfriend.
Oh my God.
And I lost my mind, and I said, I have to come out because now everyone's going to think I'm lying, and
right,
that's
right.
last thing that's I want to do.
Would you give that guy a piece of your mind?
No, back then it was like, you know,
oh
but
my
it was just,
God.
But it bugged.
That's heinous.
I know, it bugged me enough.
Yeah.
That
maybe you ought to thank that guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right, it pushed right. me out there. It's like, yeah. look, this is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that people are going to, and then why
well,
am
you're afraid that your lesbian following was going to be
yeah.
saying she's a sellout.
That I wasn't being honest. Yes, that right. I was being a sellout.
Right.
And it wasn't worth it at all.
Right.
So I decided to come out. I didn't know how. I thought I was going to do it on Arsenio Hall.
Uh-huh.
So I knew my fourth album, you know, I'm putting that out, and I'm going to, and in the meantime, I'm doing work. Political work with a lot of gay and lesbian groups that helped get Bill Clinton elected.
Uh-huh.
And they have this inauguration ball, and it's the most fun because it's all the gay people, of course.
Right. I was there for that. That was crazy that weekend or whatever it was.
Yeah, 93.
The first
January
inauguration.
January 93. It was wild because we had not crazy. Been in the White House
right.
for a long time.
And it just was like Hollywood, man.
It was crazy. Yes.
Because my buddy worked for Clinton at the time, and I went down there, and Chuck Berry played at one of the inaugural balls.
Oh, yeah.
And who else? Oh, man, I met
Rock
Chuck
and
Berry.
Rock and roll was back
it
in
was
the White
crazy.
House. We
yeah.
were there.
Yeah.
And us gays were being gays, and
yeah,
we were
yeah.
allowed to be part of the party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I came out at the inaugural ball there with everyone. I was like,
on stage?
Course, yeah, I'm gay. Well, it was just a big party, and
right.
there was a microphone, and
right, right.
And
you just stepped up, like, hey, but for everyone's information.
Yeah. Well, Katie Lang had said some things, and there was a couple other people there, and she was out. She had just come out a few months before
uh-huh.
that.
What's she up to?
She does her kind of Tony Bennett thing
right, right.
and sing.
I haven't heard or seen her in a long time.
Yeah, I know. She kind of.
So she goes up. She's already gay.
Yeah.
And now,
she's kinda,
now
yeah.
the pressure's on. And you
yeah.
just take the mic.
Boom. So I come out.
What'd you say exactly?
I said, she introduced me, Melissa Etheridge, and I come out, yay, and everyone's screaming, hollering, because it's one thing that I'm just even there supporting
right.
them.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, I just want to say I'm just so proud to be a lesbian. And
yeah.
Went nuts.
It's done. Did
Over.
You feel? Did you feel a different? Did you?
Oh, I did. I walked. It was like a match lit. It's like now you're on a journey. Here
right,
you go.
Right.
Because
right. it's
I
all
mean,
out.
It, boom. In the press, it was like Clinton's inauguration. Blah, 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 and there's a little tiny and Melissa Etheridge came out as a lesbian.
Still under the radar.
Yeah, it's under there. I missed the big boat.
Yeah, still not a hit record
no.
there.
But it became the thing that everybody talked about.
Right.
When I did, so all of a sudden my publicity went from I'm a rock. And roller playing to oh, she says she's a lesbian, and then everyone wanted to talk to me. All of a sudden I'm doing the morning shows, all
right.
of a sudden I'm doing all of a sudden
and this is coinciding
this is
with the fourth
come
album.
To my window yeah come to my window and
so it's all
it just went crazy.
And it must have been a relief in terms just even performing that you could enter a situation that transparent and just push whatever you wanted
just
to do
be
just
there.
Be yourself,
and I
yeah.
tried, it was like, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna sit and go, I'm a lesbian. I just gonna be myself. And if they wanna talk about it, they can bring it up. Great, fine.
Right.
Well, what started happening is every gay person everywhere.
Yeah.
Came out to me. They still do
for a minute. Yeah,
exactly. Still do everybody.
Well, the idea of wanting to be heard and wanting to be public and finding a way to do that, because it seems to me mostly employers and family. It's so frightening for everybody still, even in the climate that is fairly embracing. It's got to be 80-90% more embracing than it is now.
Yes. When I see kids now who are openly gay, like, yeah. you know, 18, 19, right. that are just like...
What a relief.
Oh, God, and to not to go through those years. And back when the only place you could meet someone is a place where you had to drink. And, of course, you were drinking to get your courage up because here you are doing this bad thing. And it just leads to...
Leads to bad people. But, yeah, when you're 18...
Those are some great relationships.
You're drinking at a gay bar because you can't go anywhere else. You might get into trouble.
Maybe. Possibly.
You might be in an age-inappropriate situation with an old pervert.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
That's how your generation learned.
I know. That's how we learned. Thank you.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that hard-earned wisdom if you live through it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, so that album's huge, makes you a superstar. And then you do a few other records.
Yeah.
And then you're just kicked in the teeth.
Kicked in the teeth.
By life.
Life, that's what happened.
Ooh.
I know, and you know what? That's the crazy thing about being famous.
Yeah.
I believe that the whole purpose of life is to kind of get your teeth kicked in and see how much you can, how high you can go.
I've had enough.
Yeah. Well, it means, just think of what you're banking away. I mean, some people, they call it karma. I don't quite believe in the whole karma thing.
You believe in conditional karma?
No, I believe in, we're all doing this we're trying to not have to come back and do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the opportunity to do it on such a high level and kind of go through big things, when you're famous, you have the opportunity to really transform some stuff for a lot of people.
Or get the points.
Yeah.
Karma points.
Yeah, get the
karma.
So there you go.
So you did the gay thing.
So I did the gay thing, yes. Yeah. And... yes, it was horrible to have a breakup in public. Yes, it was horrible to feel like I let down a whole community, because here I was regarded as there's this perfect relationship. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
We have children.
Mm-hmm.
That about killed me when I thought, really, we're going to divorce, and I've just shown the world what a gay family looks like, and now we're going to... That broke my heart more than even really losing the relationship, because I really needed to be out of that relationship.
Right.
But just that I felt like I let down so many people and I just became tabloid was difficult.
But in retrospect, it must be heartening to know that it also showed that, I mean, what are you guys supposed to, the pressure's on you. It's like, you can't, you know, you have to be the perfect family. Like, if you're going to be gay and out and have kids and have
a
family,
you better be perfect. Yeah.
It's like, that's like middle class American conservative bullshit. And the fact is that everybody goes through breakups and drama.
51% of us, yes.
Right.
And thank God, because I learned so much. I went through it and learned so much. And so then the funny thing, then when I get cancer later, after I go through all this breakup and I go down and I'm eating like shit and I'm just really...
Did you feel that from the gay community though? They're like,
No, they felt sorry for me mostly. The gay community was like, oh, because they know.
But does anyone think of relation, like the humanization of relationships on, you know, doesn't matter what gender base it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's probably even harder sometimes.
Yeah, because you,
making note, Linda.
Linda's been in the business so long.
The gay business.
Well, that business. No, the industry business. That she's so supportive, knows everything. She's the easiest.
Not that easy.
Well, she is.
You apparently are easier.
But
from everything I've heard here, No, but like the pressure of that, of like, you know, having to maintain something because it has a political momentum to it. Without the human component, it's got to be a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But so you just felt like they felt sorry for you, but they must know in their hearts. It's like, what are they going to do?
It was at the same time. It was me And Julie broke up, and Anne and Ellen broke up like within the same 2 months.
Oh yeah.
So all the, and it was right. And they're both going back to men, and it was just like the disaster. It was like the lesbian party is over, right? You know, everyone who was, you know, gay until graduation. Now we've graduated, right. And they're all back. You know,
but it's the, but it's but it, and, but on some level, you must have known like most shit happens.
Well, yeah, and you know, my fault for being attracted to those kind that are like just right, you know, right there. So here, Ellen and I are we're single, but now we're going out on the town, and we're Sinatra, and you know,
oh, good,
and,
good, yeah, yeah,
we're like, hey,
yeah,
you know,
we're free, we're singing.
loving it.
Any other straight ladies want to try something out?
No, we were done with that.
Okay.
We went to, you know, so I was single and, you know, and the world was changing. This is 1999.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And how long before, like, when did you first get diagnosed with the cancer?
That was 2004.
Oh, so you were out there and you were in, in your second relationship.
Yeah, I'd already, And it was, you know, and she was gay through and through. I saw her papers, everything. It's like, yes, you are definitely gay.
The resume?
Yes.
When did it start?
Yes, exactly. Who have you been with? Oh, you've been with her? All right, okay. You're gay. You're
gotta be gay to be with her.
I know, exactly.
Wow, I don't even know if I'm that gay.
Yeah. All right, now I'm getting warm.
Yeah.
Okay, so I start, I kind of get disillusioned with my music. Music's changing.
Like, you did like 3 or 4 albums in this time.
Yeah, I did. And really, I did Breakdown and Skin and Lucky. Those were the three I was doing. And I'm kind of like, okay, where am I musical? Where is anyone
still
musical?
Still selling okay?
Yeah. You know, well, less and less. Each album, I'd say, was less and less. And they're sad albums because I'm in a sad place.
Yeah, you are pretty honest with what you're going through.
And I'm like, you know, here I am. I'm in my late 30s. You know, and I kind of, what is music? What do I want to do? Am I just going to play now? What?
Well, you sort of, I imagine the biggest trap to try to avoid is that once, you know, the record company and you get the, you know, it's like, you got a thing.
Yeah.
You just make that record again.
Right.
Do it over and over and over again.
Right. And all of a sudden it's not quite, all of a sudden music's changing. Mm-hmm. And so I do my album Lucky and I turn it into my record company, who's Lior Cohen's head of my record company at that time. He's head of Island.
And
he's the big guy. He's head of Warner Brothers. He's like head of everything. Now.
Right.
And so he's all hit music oriented.
Right.
So he, after I turn my record in, he says, we have this song from this other band, mm-hmm. and I've never recorded anybody else's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it nearly broke my heart because it was basically, look, if you don't, unspoken, if you don't do this song, which they think can be a hit song, they're really not going to work your record.
Right.
And I listened to the song and it's like, and it's on Lucky. It's called Breathe.
Breathe.
It was this band called Green Wheel Green Wheel didn't want it because it's such a hit song. They didn't want to release it. They got all, you know, we're independent. Right. So they basically kicked them out, took the song.
Where are they now?
Exactly.
That band?
Exactly. Gave
Good
the song
choice.
To me.
Yeah.
Gave the song to me. It said, we want you to do it. I do it. It gets some radio play. It breaks my heart because it's not me. It's like I sold out. I felt
right.
I sold out.
Right.
I basically looked up to the heavens and went, okay, what do you want me to do? And the next morning I found a lump on my breast. I went, wait a minute.
There's your next few years.
That's not what I mean.
Oh, no.
And yet it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I stopped. I canceled my tour. I stopped my life. My whole life went over me. And I unfortunately went on chemotherapy, which was horrible. But it was a dose dense because I could stay home. So it was like this nasty, nasty, horrible, horrible stuff.
Why do you say that, unfortunately? Like, you, in retrospect, you would have done something.
No, I'm that radical sort of health person that I believe that chemotherapy is really a bad idea. That the science behind it is we're going to kill every living cell.
Okay, but it saved your life,
no,
right?
No.
No.
No. Me changing my health habits saved my life because there's plenty of people who do chemotherapy and die.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty.
From chemotherapy.
A lot of times, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, and I mean, it's a radical point of view and a lot of people don't want to hear it and they think it's like, you're blaming the person with cancer. I say people have a responsibility for their health.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to eat sugar, which is pure acid in your stomach, if you're going to treat your body badly, it's going to break down eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's that the degenerative diseases are that. They're right. Heart disease, cancer. These are things because we're killing ourselves with stress and food. Mm-hmm. I made that change. Mm-hmm. I'm living. Chemotherapy is an acid they throw in you, hopefully crossing their fingers that if there's any cancer left in you, it will kill you. They don't know that it does that. So I think in 10, 20 years, they're going to look back and go, oops, sorry about the chemotherapy. But I'm a radical on that.
But you did, you had everything removed though. Right?
Yeah, I had the cancer taken out. The surgery's great. We are great. The medical industry is great at getting cancer out.
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
It's the choices later so that maybe if it doesn't come back and it all turns into numbers, they've broken it down to like a science of numbers. Mm-hmm. I walked away from that.
But so you changed your life,
mm-hmm.
but spiritually?
Spiritually, absolutely big part of it.
Like what did you do? What was the first application of spirituality? You said no chemo, I'm going to change.
Well, I stopped my chemo. I took five chemo and then I stopped it because I said this, and I called and I said, what percentage will this give me if I continue killing myself this way? And I was in danger of having neuropathy, which is where you lose feeling in your hands. I'm like, this is my life. I can't lose feeling in my hand. Forget it.
Right.
And at the same time, I was alone. It hurt to hear things when I was on chemo or see things. So I would be alone in a darkened room for days and days and days and days and days and days. Just my thoughts. And basically, it was like the biggest meditation ever. My thoughts stopped. I went through my life two or three times and it just, the tape rolled off the reel. And then I realized, wait a minute, what's this? This is spirit.
Yeah.
This is the higher part of me.
Right.
That noise of my life gets in between.
Right.
And I was able to access it. I imagine that's what, when the yogis climb up on top of the mountain, and you go away, when people used to remove themselves, that's what they would eventually find that's possible in our human self, that this paradigm that we're in, the busy work,
right,
the left brain world that we're in, doesn't let us see that spiritual side.
The avoidance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you saw the spirit side.
Yeah. And it was very clear to me.
And you stay in touch with that.
Yes. It's further away now, of course, because my busy left brain life has taken over and I'm back into the world, and, you know, doing all
desire,
this.
Desire, guitar,
all those
money.
Things, money, cars.
Yeah.
Kids, you know, all that stuff that you question, but mm-hmm. that are the things that...
No sugar, though.
No, low sugar. Okay. You know what? I've taken a 7... Because I also realize that the absence of all this is not the answer either.
No.
That we are made to run with that contrast. And I do what is called a 70-30.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. I look at my plate, and if it's 70%, you know, whole foods, whole grains, mm-hmm. vegetable, blah, blah, you know, the fruits, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then I can have 30% of whatever it is.
Ice cream.
Well, ice cream's a big, I packed away from ice cream. Mm-hmm. But my sugar is probably a much healthier sugar. I'm just in better shape than I've ever had.
You just deal with whole sugars, made fruit sugars, no processed sugars.
Yeah,
but,
processed,
you don't deny yourself everything.
There you go.
Right.
Exactly.
Balance.
Balance.
Right. And so what was the record that came out of the cancer?
Oh, well, that was when I was the awakening.
Right.
And that was a very spiritual. I actually called my record company. I said, don't even talk to me. I'm going to turn you.
Right.
I'm going to give you a record. If you want to sell it, fine. If you don't, that's fine, too. It really doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Because my music is about me. And I made the awakening, which is a part of, I wanted to explain through my music how I sort of came into this spiritual
part.
How
was that received?
It was the first critically well-received album that I'd ever made.
Aww.
It was,
see what you have to go through?
I know. It was like on the top 20, Rolling Stone. It was the first, of course it barely sold anything because it wasn't really where people understood me at. And then the next one was Fearless Love. I was like, okay, I'm going to take the spirituality and I'm going to put it kind of back into
your pants.
Into my body.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm like, okay, I'm getting my muscle back. People know me now. I've been on the Grammys, bald, and that was
insane. That was like one of those kind of like, holy shit moments.
I'm realizing, it was just a personal experience of, okay, I'm not going to let this cancer get me down. I'm going to, get back up and ride that horse again. And it went out into the world like a shot.
But that song, come on.
I know. The opportunity, that's what happened, is I got the call and went, well, I don't want anyone else to sing that song.
Oh,
I need
man.
To sing. I have the opportunity to sing that song that I've sung since 1968 when she did it.
Yeah.
I have the opportunity to sing that song
Peace
in front of
my
the
heart.
World. Yeah, Peace of My Heart.
That song is just,
it's the quintessential rock and roll lady song.
Yeah, it's the best. I don't know where she came from.
Oh, man.
You know, when you really look back at those people and you realize how short they burned and where some of them were coming from, it's like, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, well, that's why when I looked at that, when I looked at all the ones I loved and they all died, I went, wait a minute. I have to make another choice here because I don't want to die. I want to be famous and I want to do a good job here, but I don't want to die.
Well, that's the amazing thing. I mean, I have to assume that and maybe it's wrong of me, but yeah, I mean, you've made a good living.
Yes.
And you've been okay since probably that Yes, I Am record, right?
Yes.
And so it was really creative choices that you were up against and fighting for your life, obviously, and, you know, trying to reel in the libido occasionally.
After a while,
control it.
Yes, after you know two alimonies, I'm fine now with you know.
Is all that shit settled down?
All that shit has settled down, and it's because of the kids. You really don't want the kids to ever
deal with that
get involved
mess.
With that drama. Yeah,
yeah. And now, like you two are good. How long have you two been together?
We've been together 4 years. We just got married in May.
Was that amazing? Or
it was amazing too. Legally, it meant so much.
It did.
It does mean so much. To get married, to actually, we went to the courthouse in Santa Barbara, which is a beautiful courthouse. And, you know, we walk in, the guy's like, we said, we want a marriage license. He's like, okay. He pulls out the little, you know, and the
He didn't say something like, a lot of you types are coming around today.
I could tell they were like, yeah, all right, here we go.
Here comes some more.
Yeah,
here's
some more. Yeah, come on. We have singularly raised the, you know, the state treasury because we all got married. But,
Probably not. It probably was factored into their choice.
I think so.
But you've been very, you know, vocal, you know, in gay rights for like what 20 years now, one way or the other.
Yeah, it's when I came out, I realized that I got asked the questions, and I had an opportunity to say, this is what I feel. You know, we and this is our position, and this is human rights.
Sure,
and I know
absolutely.
It's weird,
but it's crazy what people get hung up on, isn't it?
Yes,
I don't always hardly ever understand it. Well, do you want to try and sing?
Sure.
What song do you want to do?
Wait, can I do a new one?
Yeah, absolutely. Do whatever.
Do
you
that
want.
One where I walk into the bar and do Take My Number.
Yeah,
this is Take My Number. It's the second song on the This Is Me album. Go something like this. Do you mind if I sit down next to you? Yeah, I remember you from school. You seem to have a good heart. Way back then, you were gonna make it big. But it's divorced now with a couple kids. It brings you back to these parts. Well, everybody stumbles, everybody hits the ground. No use running scared when those changes come around. And you don't know what might be waiting for you tonight. You really shouldn't drive, you've had too much to drink. And you shouldn't be alone, for all you're gonna do is think. So take my number, or I can take you home. Cup of coffee, we can sit all night and talk. But there's a diner always open, just around the block. So take my number, or I can take you home. All those dreams that were gonna set us free. What did we ever know at 23 about what we really want? Everybody's got a fire that's always gonna burn. No way to put it out. All we ever do is learn. And you don't know what might be waiting for you tonight. Oh, you really shouldn't drive. You had too much to drink. And you shouldn't be alone. We're all you're gonna do is think you should take my number, or I can take you home, yeah. We can find a cup of coffee, we can sit all night and talk, but there's a diner always open just around the block. So take my number, or I can take you home. Take you home. Take you home. Take you home. Honey, I can take you home. Do you mind if I sit down next to you? Yeah, I remember you from school. You seem to have a real good heart. You really shouldn't drive. You had too much to drink. You should not be alone, where all you're gonna do is think. So take my number, or I can take you home. We can find a cup of coffee, we can sit all night and talk, but there's a diner always open just around the block. Take my number, or I can take you home. Uh-huh, take my number, honey, I can take you home.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to me, Melissa.
Oh, it's my pleasure, hon.
How was that? Was that... Did you cry? I cried twice. Melissa Etheridge, what an amazing experience that was. I really just loved it. Love her. That's our show. Thank you for hanging out. Again, have a good holiday. Be safe. I hope you get what you want. I hope you enjoy giving. If you're giving, I hope you like that just for what it is and not for how it will be received. Cuz you don't, that's a sad thing when you give and you don't get what you're expecting for something back. What one thing or another back and it doesn't come, and then you're like, "Ugh, giving's horrible." Tricky business. Gifts. But I hope it all works out. Go to WTFpod.com. Get that free app. Get that premium app. We're putting a special, a whole episode for vinyl lovers. A whole premium episode if you upgrade to premium. I'm going to be doing more of that. I've said that before, but I think I'm going to be doing more of that. I don't think I'm going to play guitar today. I know, some of you are really bummed out. I know, I can hear the disappointment. We just had a song, though. Okay. It's okay. I don't even want to go to holiday parties. I don't even want to go. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.